to Big Questions, an ongoing tour of the big questions of life presented by Winsome Media. Now let's get right to today's discussion with your hosts, John Quigley and Bill Cook.
You know, and we don't question history. That's another little aside here,
right,
too.
I think what I'm trying to say is, from your technical perspective, you deal with probability. We talk probability, probability, probability.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, when we go out and live it in the real world,
right,
we talk certainty. The guy across the street who has the Washington quarter in his pocket is certain that Washington crossed the Delaware.
Those are New Jersey quarters, by the way.
New Jersey quarters,
yeah.
Exactly. Is that?
I think you're right. But you know, that's great, Mike, that you raised that, because in inductive studies, proof has no meaning. The term has no meaning unless you use the word proof as sort of a high enough probability so as to exclude practical doubt. That kind of definition? Because what I found in the books when I go back to read is that historians, scientists, lawyers will say, there's no proof in this matter. Even our law courts, you know, it's beyond, you know,
a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, beyond reasonable
doubt.
Yeah,
speaking of
before
historians
we get too
and lawyers,
far into it, we should just invite our listeners to to know where we are. Welcome to the Big Questions program. I'm Bill Cook. And
John Quigley.
And we have with us today two special guests, Dr. Gary Habermas, who is the chair of the Religion and Philosophy Department at Liberty University. Wonderful guy. We've been enjoying visiting with him. And we have Dr. Mike Hart, who is an esteemed lawyer.
Well,
just ask his wife.
Just ask his wife.
Very small people, a group of people, but esteemed nonetheless.
We've been discussing historical probabilities, the historicity of things like Washington crossing the Delaware and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And we're just, you know, you joined us as we were discussing that sitting here in Dr. Habermas's living room in Lynchburg. It's a fascinating discussion as to how do we know history is history.
I guess the point of that discussion was that when we talk about the resurrection as opposed to other events in history, a lot of people tend to switch criteria pretty quickly because of what you were saying, Gary, that it doesn't really have much import or impact in a person's life whether or not Washington
sure.
crossed the Delaware.
Cherry tree, sure. River, sure.
But if the resurrection took place, that's got some real significance for people. So it's in one sense, it's proper to put a higher criteria on something that means more, that's more at risk, but it ought to be recognized at the same point that you're switching criteria. Is that my understanding your argument?
Well, that's another point where there's some theoretical dispute. That is, do you need more evidence for greater or more unlikely events, the Everest-type things? And some people say, no evidence is evidence, and you just need a fair case. And others say, you need more for these events. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or not. Some Christians are both sides, too. But, yeah, I think the difference here is the guy who says, Washington, hey, he's first president. It's got some meager meaning for me today in my workaday world. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ raised from the dead, hey, you're kind of getting in my face now. You know what I mean? Because I'm a Hindu or I'm a skeptic or I'm a something. And because I do find when I go out and do debates and things, people recognize that there's something at stake with the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
I've wondered about this for a long time, but there's like this innate sense that, let's put it in philosophical form, if resurrection, then truth of Christianity. It's like they realize it follows, and you're getting a little too close for comfort. So every red flag that could possibly go up goes up. They're not going to do that about Washington.
Right.
Because
it doesn't matter.
The stakes aren't as high.
Sure. And even the way we use words. I love ice cream. I love my wife. I believe in George Washington. I believe in Jesus Christ. We throw words like love and believe around with two and three and four levels of meaning.
Right.
Whereas Christianity, all analogies break down, but Christianity, I think, basically asks you to say I do to Jesus. It's asking you for a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget, I do is always, people like to say, yeah, that's what I mean. It's faith. It's a leap. No, it's not. Nobody ever says I do without data.
Mm-hmm.
We would say the person's stupid who says I do without data. You say, what, were you on a drug trip? Were you drunk last night and woke up with a ring on your finger? We think those are amusing sorts of stories because the wise man gets data before he says, I do.
Let's talk about some of that data.
Yeah, let me follow that up, though. I think there's a real important point here because I think the nature of the datum between Washington crossing the Delaware and the resurrection of Jesus is exactly the same. We have documentary evidence and we have archaeological evidence. That's it. They're the same. If a person sat down and had real questions about the historical fact of Washington crossing the Delaware, you as a historian, if you were the expert, you would sit down and present them with the arguments and ultimately end up with an argument that was very, very probable. Not certain, but probable. That person would walk out with certainty, though. They wouldn't doubt that Washington crossed
the Delaware. They'd hear you say
yes. They'd hear you say yes. That's the nature of knowing everything. And it's the same thing with the resurrection of Jesus, isn't it? I mean, the evidence is there. Now, the question of faith isn't leaping from a probability to a certainty. It is, what do you do with the fact that really exists?
Right. Now, so let's extend your illustration. I think that's great, Mike. If you were to then show them, are you convinced about George? Yeah, sure. Yeah, like, I still got this quarter, but now you've given me five arguments. Now, what if you said, now, there's something missing from this discussion. What if I told you that fact should make a difference in your life? And if you could give them reasons for why that fact should make a difference, now they like go to the next level and they're thinking as they go out to the car, this is cool. I not only learned something about American history, but I learned something I never realized. This makes a difference in what shirt I put on tomorrow morning or what I do when I go to the office. If you could show them that, that'd be very valuable. But that's what Christians claim is normal parlance, a normal move from the resurrection to everyday life. That's an extraordinary claim. It's not just true, but it should change the way you live and what you think.
Right. Because of the resurrection that happened, Jesus really is God.
Right. Now, I should say in passing, the Himalaya thing, there are other historical events. There are not. The miracles, the resurrection's head and shoulders, creation's head and shoulders. But there are pivotal American events. How many of us don't rest on the fall of the Russian Empire and Marxism or the election of a favorite president that we think changed the course of American history? People still talk about John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So there are pivotal events that make a difference in my life. You know, if it wasn't for this president, I wouldn't be living in a lap of luxury like I'm living today. It's one of the arguments the Democrats are using today. So there are events that change our lives.
Let's play that out a little bit and apply it to the resurrection. You mentioned the person comes and wants to know about whether or not Washington crossed the Delaware. You'd lay some facts out and present a case, and preferably these would be points of data that scholars would agree upon.
I think that's the best case.
What are the points of data that scholars, in general at least, would agree upon with regards to the resurrection of Jesus Christ?
Well, you could really do this for his whole life. There's a number of scholars who will start with facts about Jesus. But if you just take the last, traditionally, 3, 4, 5 days of his life, you know, Last Supper on, Gethsemane on, trial on, you've got things like this. Virtually everybody believes that Jesus died due to the rigors of crucifixion. That is not disputed. I mean, I think of the founders of the Jesus Seminar who say that's the most sure fact about his life. Mm-hmm. So you've got Jesus died due to the rigors of crucifixion. Secondly, he was buried. And I just stop right there because John Dominic Crossan is going to say buried in the ground and eaten by dogs, perhaps.
Right.
But still buried.
Still buried.
So he's buried. Psychological fact, besides in Scripture, the disciples were in a state of despair. What do you do when your best friend dies? And dies very suddenly, and all your future was on his shoulders. So, mm-hmm. I mean, what can you do but anxiety, depression, anger, hatred? Fourth, the tomb was found empty. And that's not as unanimous as the others in this list, but a majority of scholars still grant that. Fifth, this is the key one, as we said in the last program, that the disciples, there were people out there who said, who believed, I saw appearances of the risen Jesus. And critics will grant it if you word it this way. The disciples had experiences which they took to be experiences of the risen Jesus. No problem. Their lives were transformed. Number six, I think that's six. Their lives were transformed. To what extent? Well, I don't go as far as some Christians who say, well, they all gave their lives. Well, I think that's a real probable thesis, but it's more probable if I say they're willing to die. Leave it right there, because that's the point you want to make. They're willing to die. They turned the world upside down. They began preaching. A church is born. The Jews did not upset that they had a motive and they had the power to do something. They couldn't overturn that conclusion. I mean, if you think about it, Jerusalem's the last place you want to preach this message.
That's right.
Because the Jews could say, boys, if he's raised, what's this? Critics like to say to that, by the way, but what shape would the body be in 50 days later, Pentecost? I don't think that may not be the point. The point might be that there's a body in the tomb at all.
Right.
So the fact that there's no uproar shows, I think, that tomb was empty.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got two down at the end of the list that I think are very persuasive, and that is two skeptics, one named James, one named Paul. Both come to Christ, and I'll use the phrase I used earlier, critics like this, they both came to Christ after they had an experience that they believed to be appearance of the risen Jesus. Now, the reason these two guys are good, so James is an insider. He's a family skeptic. I think it's Josh McDowell, who I heard say one time, Don't be too critical of James. What would you say if your brother claimed to be the Son of God?
Good point.
James.
Good
that's
point.
A good perspective. Sure. I live with this guy to steal the words of a Christian hymn. I walked with him and I talked with him, and Messiah he isn't, because critics believe he was a skeptic. You got Paul. He's a different kind. He basically had a PhD in Judeo studies at the feet of Gamaliel, and he's their star witness. He's the guy that's sent out to get all these idiots together. And number one, he can refute them with logic, and number two, he can kill them or imprison them. So he's a special kind of guy, and both of them come to Christ. So that's a list of facts, and right there, with the possible exception of some playing around in the empty tomb. Well, I'll add one more. The resurrection is the center of early preaching. That's important, because we tend to pay more attention to those things that make more of a difference to us.
Well, I don't know how some people would cry foul on that, because the notion that the documents that we have, you can have a mythological, a legendary build-up over time. We only know that from the original documents, so wouldn't you have to work back and prove that mythology didn't creep in there?
Even so, it would still be the central proclamation. Let's say, for example, that American culture is based on the fact that George Washington crossed the Delaware. Let's just say that for a second. And somebody publishes a dissertation saying it didn't really happen. It's a moot point if American culture is still based on that. My point would still be we have to decide if it's history or not, but it's still the central proclamation. Let's say it a different way. Paul said if there's no resurrection, there's no faith. If there's no faith, there's no church. So the resurrection is the center of early proclamation. And the reason I think that's important is a quick little story here. When I was younger, I was 2 years old. My brother was one. He used to teach with me here at Liberty. But I had 105 temperature. My brother had 104. My mom thought it was about time. You know, young mother, let's go to the doctors. The doctor said, ma'am, I wouldn't be concerned about this. It's the flu. I've seen dozens of cases. We take the boys home. Nothing I can do about the virus. Last 3-4 days, give them plenty of liquids. And then this sentence, if I were you, I wouldn't worry about them. My mom said this thought shot through her mind. No offense, but if they're your boys, I wouldn't worry about them. Now, the point here is, I don't want your boys getting sick, but after all, these are my boys. And my point is, the closer something is to your heart, you go overboard. You call the doctor too many times. You take them, you know, I'm worried all night. Please let that fever break, you know. And I'm concerned. I'll call you and ask how your son's doing. But, man, this is turmoil for me. I'm saying those things which are closest to our heart, the woman, it's always in the movies, you know, it's the woman who says, are you sure you love me? Are you sure you love me? We don't say she doesn't love me. We say this is really important to her. And that's the point of the resurrection, to know it's really central, like my mom with her boys. The things that are central to us, we take more care about. And if after their care, they still believe the resurrection happened, after the Jewish leaders' care, they couldn't do anything about it, I think you're starting to build a good case here. So I think centrality is a pretty strong point. Now, you're right. Someone could say, well, we still have to decide if it's a central myth or a central fact. Mm-hmm. And you could do that. But the fact that it's still central for them, and they weren't able to uncover it as a myth, and neither were the Jews.
And certainly they were contemporaries of the events in discussion.
Yeah, so. I mean, they're in the right place at the right time to blow this thing out of the water. And still, go back to my list, what about James and Paul?
Right.
A stopper on almost every naturalistic theory. Bunch of comebacks for the classic naturalistic theories, you know, Christ wasn't raised, what happened was fill in the blank. And there's a lot of reasons, and skeptics usually abandon those because of those reasons. But two reasons in almost every list, I tell my students, James and Paul. We do with James and Paul because if this is a nice story that's being spread around, see, James's point was he saw the risen Jesus, 1 Corinthians 15:7. Paul's point, just one verse later, in 1 Corinthians 9:1, am I not an apostle? Have I not seen the Lord? Or 1 Corinthians 15, last of all, he appeared to me also.
Right.
That's why they're converted. I think of Lewis's words, C.S. Lewis. He says, when I came to Christ, something like, I came into the kingdom kicking and screaming, the most reluctant convert in all of England. You got to say that applies to the Apostle Paul. You know, he came in kicking and screaming.
The most, or the least worthy, the most unworthy person, most unlikely candidate to be a Christian.
Same context, 1 Corinthians 15, he says, one born out of due time. That's the Greek for abortion or a C-section. I wasn't born in the normal manner. Paul knows that. So he was dragged in. I just think the combination here, skeptics, believers, unbelievers, women, men, groups, singly, an empty tomb, you're back to the historical evidence, you say, just about the time I want to think, boy, hallucination, I take a walk and go down to the empty tomb. You know, it's just, we have this evidence coming in from a bunch of different angles.
Kind of touched on it before. Is there any indication from from that time period that of any non-Christian sources screaming foul, that we do have a body here. We don't know what you guys are talking about. Here's proof that you got it wrong.
The only source like that for 100 years after Jesus is right in the New Testament, and it's the Jewish claim that the disciples stole the body. Interestingly enough, Justin Martyr, 150 AD, and then later, 50 years later, we read in Christian writings that the Jews were still saying that. That's the only thing.
Like they were sending out trained guys to spread that.
And Matthew says that story is still being spread to this day. Interestingly enough, they're not saying foul, the body's here. They're saying foul, the body's not here. So, again, enemy attestation, bottom line is that tomb's empty.
Right.
But now if the disciples didn't steal the body, and this doesn't disprove it, but just an historical note, that view has not been held by a reputable critic for over 200 years.
Wow.
And the reason is, same thing I said earlier, what do you do when the guy jumps on the grenade, the suicide dynamite truck driver drives in the American troops, kamikaze pilots, even the UFO, you say, I wouldn't have done that, but those guys are brave. Well, if the disciples are brave, i.e., they really believe their cause,
right,
it really stretches the limits of credulity to think they stole the body and conveniently forgot, overlooked, ignored, because the least you can say is these guys believed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't even call them brave, but they believed it so much.
Right.
I mean, the New Testament doesn't portray these guys as brave. That's
oh, at the beginning.
Yeah, at the
but beginning. Then they're shouting at Jerusalem.
End,
at
yeah.
The, so you've got two refutations right off the bat, is that they were transformed. How do you lie and then get really transformed over it?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they're willing to die, so when the sword's put to their throat, that's a different level. And then to skip just to do four quick ones, then you got James and Paul. How do you get James involved? Hey, James, come here. We stole your brother's body. Listen, we really want you involved. And Paul's the laugher. Yeah.
You get to die for it.
Here's what's in it for you. You get to get beat up. Because James, you know, we have the death of James reported by Josephus.
Mm-hmm.
I should add this. Transform lies. I said you can't prove they all died. Of the four best known early Christians, let's say Paul, James, Peter, and John. James, now the brother of Jesus, not the son of Zebedee.
Right.
Paul, James, John, and Peter, probably four best-known early theologians. If you want to throw James, son of Zebedee, in there, that's great. That's five. We have the deaths recorded before the close of the first century. James, the son of Zebedee's death is recorded in the New Testament. James, the brother of Jesus' death, is recorded by Josephus. And Paul and Peter's martyrdoms are recorded by Clement about 97 A.D. So only John. We do have early records of four of the big five of their martyrdoms, for what they believed. Then you got James and Paul. Paul, come here a minute. Look at, don't, it's like your kids, you know. Don't say no. I want to go to Johnny's house and spend the night. Don't say no. Here's the facts. Okay, Paul, don't kill me just yet. We stole the body. Please, I'm being facetious, obviously, but
sure.
Paul, here's what's in it for you. Your Roman citizenship will mean nothing. You can leave your PhD in Jewish studies, and you're being the hot young scholar here, and you know, you can do that. You won't get any money for it. You're going to get a lot of prestige among us servants and slaves, and people don't mean a lot of difference.
Mm-hmm.
And one day you can die for it.
That's right.
But we want you to join us.
And
okay,
along the way, get stoned and left for dead.
You can get stoned,
oh, yeah, Paul
you can
goes,
get beaten, you can be shipwrecked.
Sure.
Just a few of those things
and
along the way.
Paul says, yeah, you're right, I'll leave
sure,
it all.
Sure, what's
he
the downside?
He really didn't even get the prestige.
No,
the fact of the matter is, they said, no way, we don't want anything to do with you. You're the guy that kills everybody.
Well, yeah, that's a great point. You know, I was reading recently in Acts that when he comes back from Damascus.
Oh, yeah, they don't want him at all.
In Jerusalem, nobody wants to talk to him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's right. They're all afraid of him.
You know, my favorite illustration of this is, I say to my students, the resurrection is a many-faceted diamond. And by that I mean, if you ever picked up a diamond, you know, to buy for somebody, and the jeweler says, well, here, take my magnifying glass. And you say to your wife or whomever, you say, wow, look, I turn it this way, and it's like this, but I turn it this way. Whoa, look when I do this. There's different facets. And if what you want, if what you need in the resurrection is evidence, it's there. If what you need is the center of your faith, well, you know, you got the gospel facts. When you say I do to Jesus, you're saying I do in light of the irreducible minimum, by the way, in the New Testament, it says deity, his death, and his resurrection. But without the resurrection, none of the rest of it makes any sense. And so, turn it that way, you got soteriology.
Mm-hmm.
Turn it another way, it's the keys to the kingdom. I mean, it's what gets you through the doors. Turn it another way, that's what comforts me in time of sorrow. So the resurrection is just so great because no matter which way you turn it, the light hits it from a different angle and it does, well, let's say it's all things to all men.
Sure. I suspect, I know all of us in the room here, and I'm sure all of our lives have been impacted by the resurrection in different ways, perhaps, mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, maybe similar ways. I know when I came to Christ, it was as a result of studying the resurrection and allowing the evidence that I saw for the resurrection to provide credibility for the whole plan of salvation that I found to be unique among other world religions, that it's not what we do to please God, it's what Jesus Christ did on the cross in removing our sins and giving us that path to the Father.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the massive evidence for the resurrection that led me to believe that that was credible. Where I was right before that was believing that pretty much summing up a worldview in life is tough and then you die. That life is pretty much a sick joke and ultimately meaningless, and feeling very much despair as a result of that. And the way my life, the initial change in my life as a result of the resurrection was seeing life bloom with meaning and just being pregnant with significance and a God who really is there and really does love us. And death is not the end. And even though things may not go our way in this world, there is something else to look forward to. There's a time of justice, and there is a time of peace and joy, which, in fact, spills into this world to some extent as well.
I think that's one of the key points of the resurrection, is that it has an effect. Unlike whether you believe George Washington crossed the Delaware or not.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any difference. But if you believe the resurrection, it's going to change your life.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be a scary proposition.
There, as I've grown in Christ, there have been other aspects as well. But, Gary, tell us a little bit about what the implications are for the resurrection for you.
Well, you had implications to get you into the kingdom there because, you know, John, you came to Christ by studying this. I think of my life as being framed by two resurrection events. One was I was raised in a Christian home, but I came to question it very quickly. I spent 10 years asking a lot of skeptical questions. I used to debate with anybody religious who lived and moved and breathed, and that could be a Mormon, it could be a Jehovah's Witness, it could be a skeptic, but it could also be a Christian. I made some Christians really angry at me for telling them they couldn't know the Bible was inspired, things like that. It was the resurrection that rescued me from 10 years of skepticism, where it wasn't just a thinking thing to me, it was where I lived and breathed. I tell people, and this is literally true, I studied books before I went to bed, and that's where I got my bad habits of staying up late at night. In those days, I had to get up early the next morning to go to school, and the first thought the next morning was where I'd leave off the night before. This questioning framed my life. But then now down on this end of my life, in 1995, my wife passed away with stomach cancer, and she wasn't, you know, more than my wife and the mother of my four children. She was my best friend. I mean, we had a great marriage. That wasn't just Monday morning quarterbacking, but anyway, the resurrection is what gave me comfort there. So on the front end, it answered my questions. On the back end, it framed my life existentially with meaning. I still remember the grad student who, strangely enough, is now on our faculty, but guy called me. I remember right where I was standing in this house. He called me and he said, "Where would you be?" And my wife was upstairs in bed with cancer. "Where would you be if it weren't for the resurrection of Christ?" I think of Paul's encouragement. We mourn, and I guess you could say we could add, we suffer, but not like those without hope. So Jesus wept at the grave of his friend Lazarus, and incredibly there, he knew he was going to raise him in a matter of minutes, and he still wept. So mourning is an aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
We're not asking, can Christians live above that? We're asking, can we live through it? Mm-hmm. And I think the message of the resurrection is, yeah, you can answer your questions, for both of us, front-end questions, but there's also back-end questions. What happens when you're really hurting? And to me, my friend's question, where'd you be throughout the resurrection? A lot of despair is where I'd be, fronting question again. But secondly, to sorrow with hope is a lot of difference from sorrow without hope. And I think if the resurrection is true, it have to be granted. I think non-Christians would generally have to grant, and would often grant, Anthony Flew did in our debates, that if Christ has been raised from the dead, it would make a lot of existential difference. Of course, the question is, does he? And if he has, then does that mean for me today?
I think then, Dr. Habermas, that it begs a question for everyone, not only as we're discussing it, as we research it, but for all those who've been listening, is the resurrection a reality? Obviously, in our lives, we believe that the resurrection is a reality, and it's made a difference. If you haven't researched the resurrection, if you have not taken the time to study the evidences, both for and against, for the resurrection, I would encourage you to do that because it will change your life.
I think that's right. I would suggest a couple tools, perhaps, for searching that out. Certainly a couple books by Dr. Habermas. One entitled The Historical Jesus, Ancient Evidence for the Life of Christ, is a very good work on the subject, which deals with both biblical evidence and extra-biblical or non-Christian ancient sources as they touch on the question. Another good book that Gary wrote with J.P. Moreland called Beyond Death, Exploring the Evidence for Immortality. Both very well done books.
Yes. And if you have questions, feel free to call us here at Winsome Media. Check out the website. Drop us an email. We'd love to talk to you about it. Even if you're critical and you don't like what we've been presenting, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you need if you want a copy of these broadcasts,
we'd be happy to send we'll be happy to send you a free copy of this broadcast.
That's right. Dr. Habermas, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Paul. Enjoy being with all of you.
Mike, thank you as well.
Why, thank you.
Great. Join us next time right here with the big questions.
Production of Winsome Media, building intelligent bridges to faith in Jesus Christ. For more information on Winsome Media, you can contact us at Winsome Media, P.O. Box 3388, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 18017, or call us toll-free at 1-877-WIN-MEDIA. You can also check out our website at www.winsomemedia.org. And don't forget to tune in next time for more answers to big questions.